Hi, and welcome back. In this episode, I talk with Boris Peshchikov. Boris is the owner of The Alternative Strategy, a cryptocurrency and blockchain research and investment firm. In 2017, Boris left Wall Street and the traditional investment space to focus on the blockchain, cryptocurrency, and other alternative investments like gold and silver. Boris is my personal crypto coach and advisor. As a blockchain beginner, I'm learning the basics of investing in cryptocurrencies by working with Boris. Since working with him, I've invested a good amount of my investment dollars into crypto. I must admit, albeit a little scary, it's a lot of fun. And with Boris's help, I'm excited to report that my returns so far are seriously outperforming my other assets. In this episode, you'll listen in on me asking the beginner's beginner questions like, what is cryptocurrency? What is blockchain technology? Why is it a good time to invest in digital currency? We also talk about the fraud that's happening on Wall Street these days, as well as the idea of taking back our financial sovereignty and freedom and being in more control of over our future self-retirement. We discuss what other applications these types of blockchain technologies are being used for, and we even chat a little bit about gold and silver. So if you are new to the cryptocurrency space and wish to learn the basics, you'll want to listen in. Please enjoy my conversation with Boris Peshchikov. Boris, welcome to the Wealthy Wealthy Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my goodness, we're going to have so much fun today. So for everybody listening, we know each other. We were introduced through our mutual friends, Lee and Ani, and what a great day that I got to meet you. And so you all knew each other from New York City. And so to get started, I know like originally you're from Russia and you have quite a history. So for everyone listening, before we say what you do, let's learn who you are and tell a little story about Boris.
Sure. Well, my family immigrated from a small country called Azerbaijan, which used to be part of the Soviet Union when I was 10 years old, so 1992. And we moved to San Francisco and then migrated to Boston, which is where I went to middle school, high school, and college. And after college, I moved to New York to work in finance, banking, commercial real estate investments, where I spent about 14 years in that space. And here I am now, and everything that I've kind of learned throughout that time with banking, with finance, has kind of brought me here. I'm really grateful for it, and it's allowed me to understand really well what I do now, because when it comes to economy, global economy, macroeconomics. So that's how I got here, in short.
And location-wise, here in Austin from Manhattan.
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. And so what were you doing when you were in finance in Manhattan? What did you do? What was that background? What were you doing like on a day-to-day basis?
So throughout the 14-year period, I've had many different positions. I started as a financial analyst at a subsidiary of Deutsche Post Bank. We worked in the commercial real estate lending department where we financed commercial real estate projects for acquisition and development all over the country, minimum $25 million and up. And while I was there, my team financed about $2 billion in a matter of 3.5 years. So that was my first job. But then I worked and worked at a private equity fund that owned quite a bit of commercial real estate and Class A office buildings in Manhattan. I was a broker for them, doing office leasing, space, and investment sales. And from there on, I went out and started my own consulting company where I worked with high net worth investors, helping them identify investment properties all over the world. Hotels, office buildings, land for development, multifamily properties, and on and on and on. And as I was doing all of that, I've kind of my own personal interests, aside from real estate, have always been finance and macroeconomics and kind of what's going on with the dollar, what's happening with the central banks, what's happening with our economy here locally and globally. And that's led me to do a lot of research on different types of investments, from real estate to gold and silver. And then eventually when cryptocurrencies and the digital space and the Bitcoin came about, I was very lucky to get involved in that in about what it was about 2016. And that's how I ended up here.
Well, I love it. Well, for everybody listening, Boris is my cryptocurrency coach, because that's where I'm going next, is, you know, as a money coach and educator and an investor myself, and someone very focused on net worth and building my net worth empire, I believe crypto is the next place to go. So I'm learning and studying, and I'm working with Boris to teach me all the ins and outs. And I'm a very much a beginner and nervous about this new venture that I plan to, you know, move into. So that's where I thought, as I'm learning and growing and moving into this new space, I thought my listeners might want to tag along a little bit in this learning journey. So that's why we're having this conversation today. So let's just chat a little bit from a very much beginner naivete standpoint. What is cryptocurrency?
So cryptocurrency, when people refer to, first of all, most people refer to cryptocurrency, most people talk about Bitcoin. And that's not the right way to refer to cryptocurrencies, because there are over 6,000 blockchain projects out there. And probably out of those 6,000, there are 10 different types of cryptocurrencies, which means that there are projects that are built on a blockchain, and I'll talk about what that is a little bit later, that have the capacity to allow us to transact with one another peer-to-peer and can be used as actual currency, and some of them can also be used as store of value aside from currency. So why don't I kind of give you a little bit of an understanding for your viewers who are not familiar with Bitcoin is, because Bitcoin is the king of cryptocurrency as far as anyone's concerned. The cryptocurrency space right now is about $350 billion, and Bitcoin controls about 62% of that market share. So the entire market, fortunately and unfortunately, revolves around Bitcoin. So if Bitcoin goes up, the market typically reacts with a direction that follows Bitcoin, at least in a big picture. If Bitcoin goes down, same thing. So Bitcoin is a new form of digital money and a store of value. It was built on a highly secure and highly intelligent piece of software called the blockchain. And the blockchain is something, it's basically a software that utilizes cryptography, which was invented by the CIA in the early 50s or 60s. It's highly secure. Bitcoin has never been hacked by anyone. There are rumors out there and people say, well, hasn't Bitcoin been hacked because the media has reported on it? Bitcoin itself has never been hacked. The exchanges, some of the exchanges that store and process Bitcoin happen. And if you store your Bitcoin on an exchange that's not reputable, isn't secure, then you certainly can use it, can lose it. I call Bitcoin money 2.0 because it's what it is. It's, why don't I kind of talk about some of the attributes of Bitcoin and what really makes it special compared to what we have right now, which is, you know, our fiat system. It's fully decentralized, completely peer-to-peer, and there are no intermediaries that are needed to transact for you and I, which means no banks. So you and I, you can be in a small country in Africa as long as you have an internet connection, and I can be in New York City or in Austin, and you and I can transact any day of the week. There are no banking hours, no business hours, no holidays. Bitcoin is available 24/7, 365, and the costs for transacting are fractions compared to what it is to use the SWIFT system for banking or PayPal or anything else. It's open and transparent. It's borderless, which makes it global, and it's not tied to any specific country or economy, and there's never anything that's existed anywhere in the history of our modern economy that's been global where people can use the same exact currency in different parts of the world. So being on the same level, really, it's amazing. Each Bitcoin is divisible into 100 million pieces called Satoshis. So once Bitcoin becomes more and more popular, it's going to be much easier to transact with it. It can never be confiscated as long as it's in your possession, which is, you know, you and I have talked about sovereignty and how that's very, very important to us. We work hard, we pay our taxes, and we want to be able to have control of our money. We don't want anyone to be able to tell us what to do with our money, how we can or can't spend it, and most importantly, when we can't spend it. I want to be able to transact on a Sunday afternoon without having to wait for my transaction to clear on Monday. And as long as I'm not doing anything illegal or hurting anybody, I don't think anyone should tell me how to use my own money. And most important with regards to Bitcoin is that it's a deflationary asset, the way it's designed versus an inflationary asset. And I can go into that. So an inflationary asset is something that can be created in infinite amounts. So for example, a US dollar is an inflationary asset by its definition. It has no ceiling, no cap. In fact, you know, one of the things that's happened, a lot of people may or may not know this, but we've printed more money in the last 6 months, the US government, than we have in the last 100 years. And that has significantly further devalued our currency. I mean, the dollar has lost over 90% of its value, purchasing power, in the last 100 years. So what a dollar can buy 100 years from now is completely different than it is today. It can't buy anywhere close to that. Bitcoin operates the other way around because Bitcoin has a capped amount that can ever be created. And that amount is 21 million. It's written in a protocol. It can never be changed or altered unless the majority of the users and the miners and developers that are involved around it, which is millions at this point, all vote. And that's not going to happen. So it's super stable. We, for example, we have no idea how many dollars are in circulation at this particular moment. We don't know how much in dollars are going to be created this week, this month, this year. The Federal Reserve tells us, but we really don't. There's no way for us to audit the balance sheet or to see what's happening. We don't know how many dollars are going to be created in a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 100 years from now. With Bitcoin, we know all of that to the T, to the penny. We know that 900 Bitcoin are added into circulation every single day. We know that the last Bitcoin will have been added into circulation by 2140. So when you have all this information, it makes the currency much more stable, much more predictable. And even though Bitcoin has been quite volatile since its inception 10 years ago, it is in its infancy. And we're seeing it stabilize as more and more major funds, institutions come in and invest billions and billions and billions of dollars into it continuously. So that's kind of my brief description of what Bitcoin is.
So the way you've described it to me, there's Bitcoin, but as far as the cryptocurrencies themselves, there's different functions. One is the ability to transact, meaning it's a currency, and instead of trading dollar for dollar, we're trading coin for coin, and we're buying through the exchange of coins, basically, right? Mm-hmm. A second thing is that it's an investment that can go up in value so that you can actually buy coins of Bitcoin or other types. And if they go up in value, you can sell those and cash in on them. Mm-hmm. So that's two. And then three is that they really are, what did you call them? Are they like assets where you can buy different, not just the coins themselves that could appreciate it, that you could sell, but there's actually companies that you can invest in that they're kind of like they have their own shares, if you will, that you can buy those tokens. So instead of shares, it's tokens. Mm-hmm. So you really can do the same thing that we can do kind of, let's say, here in the real world, if we're buying stocks of companies or we're transacting dollar from dollar, meaning we're buying things, or maybe, you know, we invest in a, you know, in the future value of a currency, that everything, that exact same thing's possible on the blockchain, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. And it's becoming easier and easier to use on a monthly basis as more and more applications are coming up, more and more different exchanges or apps on your phone or on your computer. This field is literally evolving by the minute.
So describe let's say 3 to 5 companies whose tokens you could buy, for example, as an investment. Like, what's an example of a crypto company, a blockchain company, of what they might do and why you might want to invest in their tokens?
Yeah. So there, like I said, there are over 6,000 different projects out there. And just like with the dot-com boom, probably 85% or more of those companies will not succeed. That's just how the business is. But the other 15, give or take, percent will go on to revolutionize the way how we do business, just like the internet did, just like Google has, Amazon has, Facebook, and on and on and on and on. There are a multitude of projects. Many of them are funny and silly, and many of them are amazing. For example, one of my favorite ones is IOST. It's a company that allows you to move voting onto a blockchain. And we, you know, a lot of us have concerns about the viability of voting today and how much corruption there is and how much rigging there is. This program basically completely takes care of all those concerns. That's one project. There are DeFi apps, which are becoming really, really popular right now. And it's kind of been the boom in the last 6 or so months. What's DeFi? DeFi stands for decentralized finance. So individuals can go and deposit their Bitcoin on an exchange or a platform or an app, and they can actually earn interest on their money. And they're, what they're doing is they're parking their cryptocurrency, their Bitcoin, their Ethereum, whatever it is, whatever that app is looking for. And that app goes out and lends that money and gives them a piece. So that's one of them. There's a company called Celsius, which is one of my favorite companies. They're basically a cryptocurrency bank and also a wallet. So I keep quite a bit of my cryptocurrencies on Celsius, and I make 5% a year. And I can borrow against my portfolio at any minute. I can probably take out a loan in under 120 seconds anytime I want, with lower interest rates than most conventional lenders. And when I'm not using my money, it's sitting there safely. A company that's done over $1 billion in transactions in the last 15 months and has reputable owners, and I get to earn interest. Also, you know, Celsius has many different options. They store many different types of cryptocurrencies and something called stable coins. For example, what an individual can do, instead of having their US dollars sit in their Bank of America or JP Morgan bank account right now and lose money due to inflation, they can actually go and transfer that money into something called USDC, which is USD coin, which is a mimic that follows and mirrors the US dollar. But with Celsius, they can make like 15% a year on that money. Where else in this world can you make 15% on your currency right now? So there are crypto banks that are coming up with different projects. There are decentralized streaming services that basically mimic some of what YouTube does, except there are no restrictions, but there are not, depending on the protocol. There are no issues with freedom of speech and freedom of expression. There are so many different projects coming up there. Yeah.
So it's almost as though our real world is just going to move over to this blockchain world that, I mean, like you said, it will completely change the way we bank, the way we do business, how we transact with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to, I think within the next 10 to 15 years, once blockchain technology really becomes more and more applicable and more integrated into our society, it's going to change a lot. I mean, my goal, and I talked about this with many of my friends, is I would love to see the Internal Revenue Service be put on a blockchain, because the blockchain is the most transparent ledger, like an accounting spreadsheet, that there is. Any citizen can go, or any individual in the world can go onto the blockchain and verify any single transaction, any minute of the day. And they may not know who the individuals are that are transacting, but they can see the code. And if they, every individual has their own address, basically, a blockchain. That's how the blockchain works. It's its own address, which is a long, long set of letters and numbers. It's like a code. And for example, if I know your code and you know my code, you and I can go and verify our transaction. So with regards to the blockchain and IRS, we can really keep them accountable as to where every single one of our pennies, our tax dollars, goes, which project, when, to whom, why. And that's going to really, really incentivize us to pay taxes. And my feeling is that the result will be in us having to pay less taxes because we'll know where every single penny is going and everything will be accounted for.
Yeah, I mean, when things are transparent, it radically changes things, right? So I think that's what you're saying. One of the beauties of the blockchain is it's completely transparent. I mean, you can't hide shit.
No.
You can't be, you know, kind of slipping the cronies the money back door.
Yeah. And, you know, when Bitcoin first came out, the mainstream media and all the banks were like, well, Bitcoin is what is used for, underground and shady transactions because it can fund terror and on and on and on. There is no currency out there that's funded more terror, more drug trade, and more shady activity than the US dollar. And in fact, the opposite is true for Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. There are private cryptocurrencies out there that can't be tracked. There'll be a market for those. But Bitcoin and many of the main cryptocurrencies themselves, they're fully transparent. And you can't perform any illegal activity and expect to get away with it.
So let's talk a little bit about when you and I met last, and you know, I was just sharing with you my balance sheet and you know where my investments lie. And you were saying, you know, what I would like to see you, Christine, is that big percentage of your pie that's real estate and some of these alternative investments. I'd like to, first, we need to have at least a small piece of the pie in cryptos, but I'd like to see that become a much bigger percentage. Mm-hmm. Why? So tell me why. Like, what is it about, let's say, more legacy investments like real estate or stocks or any number of things? What is it? Why do you think why are you moving your money out of more of those types of investments into cryptocurrency or into the blockchain?
Sure. It's a good question. Well, number one, it has a lot to do with the fact of how much money the government is printing, which causes significant inflation. I mean, there's a gentleman by the name of Michael Saylor, who's a CEO of MicroStrategy, is a $1.2 billion company. And he's been all over the digital crypto news in the last several weeks because what he did is he moved 520 plus million of the 500 million they had in cash into Bitcoin. And he did it because he ran the numbers and realized that the last several years, we've had an inflation rate of 7 to 10%. So he's sitting there and saying, I have $500 million sitting in my bank account in cash, and I'm losing between 7 to 10%, which is 10% a year. That's $50 million a year. He's sitting, I'm sitting on a melting ice cube. And with what's happening right now with regards to printing, unemployment numbers that are going to be close to Great Depression by the end of this year, decreases in revenue in all the different companies out there, significant decreases. We're going to be going into a place where inflation is going to really ramp up, and it's probably going to be closer to 20% in years to come, which means that the money that you have sitting in your legacy assets, in your dollars, are going to be decreasing. The value is going to be decreasing by 20%. So the $100,000 or $100 million that you have, let's just say $100,000 you have in your bank account, is going to have the purchasing power of $80,000 by the end of next year, or highly likely. The same thing with real estate. You can purchase a piece of property for $1 million, and let's say that best case scenario, it goes up 10% in the next year in terms of value. Sure, but with the deflation, when you put that in, if you're going to lose 20% of the value in the dollar, you just lost 20%. So at the end of the day, your net loss is 10%. Versus with cryptocurrencies and also gold and silver is another one that I talk about and I'm a big fan of. I'm not just a cryptocurrency guy. I have a tremendous amount of respect for gold and silver as well. Historically, when the markets shake, when there's uncertainty, when there's inflation, when there are collapses, and when there are high numbers of unemployment, intelligent institutional and non-institutional high net worth investors flock to assets that have been stable for years and have shown stability. Gold and silver have been around for thousands of years and have always been used as insurance. In fact, our currency used to be backed by gold until 1972. So many investors are going to flock to gold and silver. But now there's another asset class that has only been around for 10 years, but has outperformed every single asset class ever. I think I could probably use that term, and you could probably look at those numbers and confirm that. I mean, Bitcoin came into existence approximately 10 and a half years ago, 10 years ago. When it first came to existence, the price of a Bitcoin was a fraction of a penny. Today, as you and I speak right now, the price of a Bitcoin is around 11,500. And because there's a finite amount, and it seems like the demand is going up exponentially year over year on an institutional side, on a retail side, and the amount that only can be created is fixed, you can only see that it is deflationary, meaning the value can only go up as long as there's demand for it. And we have no reason to believe that there won't be any demand for it.
Got it. So let's talk. Go ahead.
So the numbers are, you know, the numbers when you compare it to making 10% a year in real estate in terms of appreciation or even cash flow, they don't even compare, really. I mean, they don't. And I used to be a real estate guy for the longest time. For me, if you asked me 4 or 5 years ago, Boris, what's the best investment I can buy? I would say go and buy a multifamily property, a multi-unit property, collect rent on it, you know, collect appreciation and depreciation and all that stuff. Beautiful. Today, real estate is not even an option for me. I think that within 24 months from now, when we've hit real inflation and the unemployment numbers are really realized as to what they are. I mean, look at it this way. 1/3 of Americans, over 32% of Americans, missed their mortgage payment in July. These are real statistics. What does that tell you about where we're heading? So if you can use those numbers to really see where the breadcrumbs are leading, you go into alternative investments. And there are really two sets of alternative investments as far as I'm concerned. They're gold and silver and their cryptocurrency. And then it's up to you to do your research to see what percentage of your portfolio you want to allocate to each one of these two buckets.
Thank you. Let's shift it just a tad, just to share a little bit more what's going on, you know, in the marketplace that a lot of people are probably not aware of. Just what are you seeing? You've shared it a little bit, but just with globally. So, I mean, money is being printed like it's never been printed before. Unemployment numbers are at all-time highs. And what is that impact? And what do you see happening in the economy? Because I know you're a little bit of an economist that way.
I mean, it really shifts the macroeconomics, you know. If unemployment numbers are rising, that is a reflection of how businesses are doing. I mean, look how many businesses have closed down since COVID, not just in the United States, but globally. Huge amount, you know, 50%+ in some areas. And one of the reasons is because these businesses are just not having the revenue to be able to support their cost of operations, whether it's rent or debt or whatever it is. Look at our stock market. How interesting is it that the stock market, value-wise, is at the same place it was before COVID? And many of those companies don't exist, and many of those companies in terms of revenues are down significantly. How is that happening? Well, it's because companies are using their bailout money to go out and purchase their own stock to prop up the value of the stock. So it's a very, very fictitious economy. And this is happening not just in the United States. It's happening in Japan. It's happening in Germany. It's happening in Italy. It's happening in Spain. It's happening really everywhere. And as unemployment numbers keep on rising, these countries have no, in my opinion, where I see all of this going is going to basic universal income. And not just my opinion, but the opinion of many other individuals out there. I mean, China just this week announced that they are launching an app that is going to be basically a basic universal income app. Now, what is basic universal income? For those people who don't know, it's basically a check or a deposit in a particular account that you get every single month or every single 2 weeks. Because when a large percentage of your populace is unemployed, that's very bad because that can cause all sorts of different disorders, right? In terms of violence, in terms of you understand what I'm talking about. So the only way to keep the public calm is to keep feeding them money so that they're not starving, so they're not revolting in the streets, so they're, you know, they're not being, they're not, you know, the crime isn't going up and violence isn't going up, et cetera. And while a lot of the public is happy with that, what it does is actually takes a sovereignty away from the public. We don't know this, but the way I see it and many other people see this going is United States and most major countries apply basic universal income, but that comes with conditions. And those conditions are a particular type of a credit score or a social credit score. If they want you to do something, if you want you to go get a vaccine that you may not want to get, or do something that you may not do, you simply won't get the deposit. You simply won't qualify for assistance. That's where I see it going. And there is really not much of a choice that the global economies have in terms of their fiat systems. The banks are slowly fading. And one of the reasons why I've been speaking about cryptocurrencies, gold and silver, and alternative investments with my friends and family members and people in my community is because right now I see the largest shift of wealth happening globally, where the central banks are not doing very well. The major banks are definitely not doing very well. And the currencies are being devalued at a rate that they've never seen before. And right now, the individuals who are positioned well and leave the legacy system, at least that's my opinion, and go into the new systems, cryptocurrencies, and even gold and silver, they can actually build wealth and come out on top of what's about to happen versus go down with the sinking ship.
All right. Yes. Thank you. This is all this information that you've given me is what's really spurred me to, you know, really get serious about crypto and start doing my knowledge acquisition and start to move this direction. And anyway, let's talk about, so thank you. Just a little bit more on that. Talk about some of the corruption that is happening. Like, you've sent me a lot of videos that just show what's happening. You know, a lot of people have their retirements and their future set up in 401ks and these retirement vehicles and IRAs, and they think that that's the safe place to have the money. And when there's all sorts of nastiness that's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah. You know, the major financial institutions, what you were referring to with regards to corruption, is, well, there's a lot, but the particular is, I think it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, JP Morgan, there was a decision to fine JP Morgan. It was $1 billion fine for securities fraud. They were basically placing trades to manipulate different types of trades, particularly gold and silver, but never executing those trades, which is illegal. And they've done this for over a decade. And this is probably one of the main reasons why the price of gold and silver is where it is today. Actually, the price of gold and silver, not just in my opinion, but the opinion of many well-respected economists, it should be significantly, exponentially higher than what it is today, because the value of it, that's where it is. But these companies have been manipulating the price and making money off of it. So with regards to corruption, JP Morgan was fined $1 billion. It is estimated that they've profited between 20 and 30 billion on this. And while they did this, they actually accumulated physical precious metals in their vaults. And by the time all was said and done, they'll probably profit over $1 trillion. And that's just an estimation for $1 billion fine. And these companies are managing your 401ks, your IRAs, and our quote unquote financial advisors to the people that have been misinformed about what your 401k is. I mean, there are financial advisors out there who are very intelligent, whom I respect, who actually understand inflation and deflation and are able to position their clients' money in a very effective portfolio that will make them money. But the majority of the financial advisors out there, and it's not their fault, they are educated by these institutions. And they have a limited set of tools that they can only offer to their clients, all these funds that make them 4 or 5% a year. And then the fees are taken out and then they have to pay taxes or not taxes at the end of the year. And with the inflation and the loss of their currencies, the clients, most of the people with their 401ks and their IRAs are actually losing money in terms of value, in terms of buying power on an annual basis. So I've been teaching a lot of my friends and family members to, what I did, at least, and they've been mimicking my actions. And what I've done is I've liquidated all of my retirement accounts, all my 401ks, all my Roth IRAs and all of that. And good thing right now is due to the coronavirus, all of the penalty fees for liquidating early have been waived, at least as far as I know. And even if they are, it's still worth it. And whatever the taxes that you have to pay on your gains is still worth it. And what I've done is I've repositioned all that money into cryptocurrencies and gold and silver, because that's what is actually going to make you money in the next, 3 to 5 years to 10 years, significantly more money than if you were making in these accounts.
Yeah. And, I've never been a fan of more of these traditional investments anyway, for a myriad of reasons, but another, just because of the fees, and by the end of the day, you're not going to have enough money. You're at a loss. It's just with inflation, with fees, with taxes, and the advisors are making money, whether or not you make money. So there's any number of reasons. Despite that, I don't recommend these types of vehicles, because what it causes is us to be, we abdicate our money with this false belief that, I do this 401k, my retirement, my future self will be taken care of, without ever calculating any numbers, without seeing how much money you're actually making. All of the returns are usually inflated, based on what they're reporting, because they can report all sorts of nonsense that's not the true return. And it doesn't take out the fees and these other, other things that actually really affect those numbers. But at the end of the day, there's just this belief like, my company's matching, or I'm putting in this one 401k, or I have my money in the IRA in the market and I get these retirement benefits. Who knows what they'll be in the future anyway. But it's abdicating, meaning we don't know what that money's worth. We're not keeping track. We've not given any future value to our monies and these vehicles. So it's just true abdication, with a false belief and kind of this hope system that there'll be enough at some time in the future, which there usually isn't. Yeah. But regardless, what I love the idea of moving to crypto is because now it's our money. Like, I can see it, I can feel it, I'm responsible for it. I can see if it's going up or down. There's minimal fees, if any. Like, nobody's kind of quoting managing our money. Our money's in here and it doesn't have to be diversified in 10 billion different places. Like,
we're managing your own money.
So yeah, we don't have a money manager. Now we're managing our own money and we can see it. And it's actually not that difficult. It's far simpler at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So, that's why I'm a big proponent of just getting out of these vehicles over here anyway, because by nature of doing that, you're going to be managing and responsible for your own money, which is, again, it's a piece of sovereignty. Sovereignty is responsibility. Mm-hmm. Sovereignty is accountability. Sovereignty is mean I own this and I'm responsible and accountable. Not like, hey, I'm putting my life into somebody else's hands and expect them to make sure I'm taken care of, which they're not, because they're taking care of their lives, not your life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And these, one other thing I want to add about these legacy systems, these 401ks and all these funds, as much as I don't like to say it, they were designed to rob the general public. They were never designed to make you money. They weren't. Some do, but most don't. Not for most people, especially when you factor in inflation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know this, and a lot of people don't want to believe it because they don't want to believe that their system has screwed them. But look at the result. I mean, 1% of the population of the world controls 98% of the money for a reason. And that applies to education as well, right? How we're educated about money, it's something you teach about. And you basically help people to reverse their mentality and their point of view on what wealth is, actually, and how it is to think as a wealthy person, and you know, how to reorganize your life to actually create wealth versus how you were taught by this particular institution.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Well, great. Well, thank you so much. So if somebody says, all right, this has piqued my interest, what would you recommend them to do to get started in an inquiry?
There are thousands and thousands of videos on YouTube, different personalities talking about different cryptocurrencies, different aspects of cryptocurrencies, different attributes of cryptocurrencies, how to invest, why to invest, what to invest in. Everyone has their own different opinion. There is so much information out there, and it's beautiful. There are many, you know, one of my favorite personalities that I follow on YouTube, and to me, it's like a morning routine, is Anthony Pompliano. They call him Pomp. He is an educator and an investor and a very well-respected teacher when it comes to Bitcoin. Certainly go follow him. Go follow a gentleman called, his name is Peter Schiff, Euro-Pacific Investments. Peter is not pro-Bitcoin, but he is an economist and a very intelligent person, and I respect him, and he talks about gold and silver, and he's got his own agenda. But he lays out, the reason I like Peter so much is because he very clearly lays out what's really happening in the global micro and macro economy. Talks about the actual numbers, what's happening. So these two individuals will allow you to educate yourself and to inform yourself to a place where you are very well positioned to make an intelligent, well-informed decision as to how you want to allocate your investments.
Thank you. I love that. And what I love about you too, and I just love working with you, that you're not selling anything. You're doing this for yourself. You're helping your friends and family, maybe working with a few like me, but ultimately you're just passionate about getting the word out.
One of the things I'm trying to accomplish by teaching and educating my closest friends, my family, my community, is that, as I mentioned to you, right now is we are experiencing the largest shift of wealth transfer. It will never happen again, I don't think, at least not in a long time. And I want to do everything I can to see my friends, family, my community, and people I love and care about to be well-positioned to actually come out on top of this instead of getting robbed, which is what's going to happen to most people.
All right. Well, let's we're coming close to our wrap-up time. So what I like to do is I like to ask a few questions to bring us into the finish line. Sure. And the first thing I like to ask is, if you said, Christina, if you really, really knew me, you would know that. Ooh. What's something that not many people know about you?
I have a really, really hard shell, but a really, really soft heart.
I see that in you. I love that. Tell me a brag moment. What's something you're really proud of?
I'm really proud of what I've been able to accomplish in the crypto space in terms of my portfolio, my investments. I mean, 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago, as I was sitting there and just starting out in cryptocurrencies, I wrote and journaled on my dream portfolio and being able to assemble a type of position in various types of cryptocurrencies. And I'm very proud of the fact that I am here today.
I love that. What would be on the opposite side of that coin? What's a failure that was one of your biggest learning lessons?
I can't really recall any one particular failure because I'm an entrepreneur. I've had 5 different businesses in the last 10 years while I was working in the real estate space, different websites, different ventures. I run a debt restructuring company, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And many of them did not succeed and were quote unquote failures. Some of them did and were quote unquote successes, but there were nuggets and strengths about myself that I learned and kind of came into that are priceless to me. Yeah, I can't really think of any particular one though.
All right. Well, let's the final question is to do a little myth busting. Is there a big fat lie out there that you'd like to call out from your own point of view?
Yeah. I mean, since we're talking about Bitcoin, as I mentioned initially, the mainstream media and mainstream banking experts, one of their things about Bitcoin is that they've talked about how Bitcoin has been hacked, and it's not a very secure means of exchange, not a very secure software. And the truth is that Bitcoin itself, the technology, has never been hacked, and there is no technology that currently exists that can hack it. Because in order to hack Bitcoin, you would have to hack millions of computers simultaneously globally. And there's nothing that exists like that, because Bitcoin is built on cryptography and it's a code that changes every 10 minutes. So Bitcoin can never be hacked. What can be hacked, again, and it's important for people to know, especially if you've been investing in cryptocurrencies, are the exchanges. Exchanges can be hacked. I don't recommend, if you do purchase cryptocurrencies, I don't recommend storing them on the exchanges, because again, they have been hacked. They can be hacked. There are better exchanges out there. There are more secure ones, less secure ones, but Bitcoin itself is the most secure piece of software that has ever existed so far.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Boris. And so for everybody listening, if your interest has been piqued, and if you're in a similar place that I am, like thinking after talking with Boris, all right, I've been putting this off and I've heard this cryptocurrency thing, and I know some people that are, you know, pretty geeky about it, but not sure it was for me. But yeah, I'm thinking I better check this thing out. Boris and I are going to be having more conversations in the campus, which is an online community that I've put together as part of Wealthy Wealthy and Sovereignty Academy. So we're just going to be doing more teaching and education there. Again, Boris has just offered to coach me and help me so that we can help lots of others, like you said, be in this transfer of wealth. And if our friends and family and followers can be part of growing wealth during this changing time, then we're all the better for it. So Boris, thank you so much for your friendship, for your coaching, for your advice, for your enthusiasm. To me personally, then again, just your passion to get the word out, you know, to everyone else.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure chatting with you. And I hope that some of your viewers are going to really take this seriously and go and do more research and go learn about this. Again, there's so much information out there, and this is power. This is real power, real sovereignty. It's yours. It's right in front of you. Go out and take it.
I love it. That's a perfect place to end. So thank you so much, Boris.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's show, there are a few things you could do as a way to say thanks. First, simply hit the subscribe button to the Wealthy Wealthy podcast. By doing so, it helps both of us. You'll never miss an episode, and it helps me and my ratings. Second, if you're so ambitious, please leave a review while you're at it. Third, just keep doing what you're doing and continue to share the Wealthy Wealthy podcast with your tribe of friends and colleagues. On another note, although you likely listen to the podcast when remote, keep in mind that there are links to the guests and their work in the show notes that you can find at www.podcast.com. You can also find at www.podcast.com the latest information on my upcoming events and other things I'm creating to serve you in our mutual quest to live a wealthy, wealthy life. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.